you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, June 11th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Harare residents are concerned by the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority's decision to increase load shedding as the country struggles to survive industrial and agricultural production.
Most residents are very angry. They are bitter. A lot of them have become hopeless of the situation. They have come to expect nothing better from Zesa.
A delegation from the European Investment Bank is in Zimbabwe to engage the country's industry on reviving the struggling manufacturing sector as the EU responds to government's efforts to re-engage with the international community.
The essential purpose of the mission is to meet with private bankers and private sector representatives. They have a budget line that permits to have lines of credit for the private sector. But they will also meet with the governor of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, and there is a meeting with the Minister of Finance.
And Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff says her country is ready to host the World Cup tournament and dismisses criticism of the massive costs of staging the event that kicks off tomorrow.
We also...
Harare residents say they are concerned by the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority's move to increase load shedding at a time the country is already reeling under erratic power supplies that are affecting the revival of industries and winter crop production. Residents say the timing is not too good with the winter weather beginning to bite and the World Cup tournament set to kick off tomorrow. ZESA yesterday published a load shedding schedule that shows some suburbs in the eastern and western parts of the capital losing power for up to 16 hours a day, while others will be without power for up to 9 hours a day. The statement says the major referral hospitals and water treatment plants will be spared the load shedding. The power utility is urging consumers to use power sparingly.
Bulawayo Residents Association Chairperson Winos Dube told Studio 7 it's not yet clear whether the load shedding will affect other cities outside Harare. Dube said residents are already struggling with the power utility's current load shedding schedule. Harare Resident Trust Director Precious Shumba tells Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri that they have started gathering residents' views before approaching the power utility over the new load shedding schedule.
We also saw the load shedding schedule that was released by ZESA Holding. We cannot say we were surprised to see it, because in the past, ZESA has produced these load shedding schedules, but they have not managed to adhere to the load shedding schedule, which raises concerns about their capacity to plan in advance, given that every year ZESA is talking about the rehabilitation of their turbines at Kariba, at Wange, which we had hoped they would have come up with a solution in terms of planning how to distribute electricity equally to all areas.
Tomorrow, the World Cup is kicking off. How are Zimbabweans reacting to this ZESA schedule?
We started gathering the views of residents. Most residents are very angry, they are bitter, but a lot of them have become hopeless of the situation. They have come to expect nothing better from ZESA, and so the few hours they have electricity, they just accept the situation. They do not think ZESA's management is listening to the concerns of the citizens.
Have you made any efforts to engage ZESA over this new schedule?
So far, the Harare Residents Trust has been convening focus group discussions with communities in small numbers to gather their views before we finally engage with the authorities. But our first port of call would be the Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority to find out what they are doing and to voice the concerns of the citizens.
That was Harare Residents Trust Director Precious Shumba on the line from Harare.
The leader of a new political party, Transform Zimbabwe, Jacob Chengezeni Satia Ngarivumi, was today questioned by police in Chimanimani about his party's activities. This is the second time that the leadership of the party that was transformed from a prayer group late last year into a political party has been summoned by the police.
In April, while on a recruitment drive in Cholocho, Matabeleland and North, 16 party members were called in for questioning by the police. In today's incident, Ngarivume said his hotel room was stormed by a group of security personnel, including the military, who asked him to accompany them to the police station. Ngarivume tells Studio 7 he was questioned for more than 2 hours.
I was booked at Chimanimani Hotel, where we were in Chimanimani for the past 4 or 5 days. We are in Manicaland, we have been to Mutare and a whole lot of other places that we have been visiting. And then now in the morning, I saw 5 tech security agents arriving at the hotel. I was introduced to one from the president's office who said to me that they would want to speak to me. He identified the other people that he was with as military intelligence officers, as well as police intelligence officers who had all come to speak to me.
So what happened? We understand they took you to the police station?
Yes, and for me, when you see 5 men wanting to speak to you, at that time I felt that maybe the safest place would be even, not safe necessarily, but the safest place for me would be at the police station where at least it would be traceable, where I am and what we are doing. So they took me to Chimanimani police station, where they took me to the president's office.
Can you tell us the nature of the discussion? We understand they asked you about where you get your money from.
Yes, they asked quite a number of things. We discussed a lot of things like the party in general, who we are, how we started, you know, which churches we come from.
That was the president of a new political party, Transform Zimbabwe. You are speaking on the line from Chimanimani with Studio 7.
The MDCT youths in Bulawayo, who seized a vehicle used by Ousted Matabeleland North Chairman Sengezo Chabangu, are preparing to return the property to their rivals following the court ruling yesterday that their action was unlawful. MDCT Deputy President Tokozani Kupe's chauffeur, Witness Dube, and his accomplices are said to have seized the vehicle from Chabangu's driver in Bulawayo last month. Dube and his accomplices allegedly assaulted Chabangu's driver and his companions before stealing cash and cell phones from them. The robbery case is still pending at the magistrate's court. Lawyer Kutatapulu, who is representing Chabangu's camp, tells reporter Sitandekile Mhlanga the vehicle is expected to be returned within the next fortnight.
The vehicle had been taken away from the people who possessed the vehicle unlawfully, and therefore those people have been ordered to return the vehicle. Do not return the vehicle to the applicant. There is an alternative that the sheriff of Zimbabwe will seize the vehicle and return it to the applicant as soon as the vehicle is located. The vehicle must go back to the people who found it. The issue of all that did not arise. The issue is whether it is lawful to take the law into your own hands. If you have any grievance, then you should adopt lawful courses in order to address that grievance.
There is also another case at the magistrate court concerning the same people. How does it tie in?
I'm aware of this matter, but I'm not part of it. But it's a criminal case, not a separate case. Here we're talking about possession of the vehicle. It disposed of the applicant of possession of the vehicle. The robbery case is a criminal case where the people are being charged for their conduct in the sense that it was a crime. But there's still the issue of the car, which the applicant wants back. And if you want to get that car back, the appropriate forum to go is civil court, because it's a civil matter.
That was lawyer Kutatapulu on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad announced a wide-ranging amnesty this week, less than a week after he was re-elected to another seven-year term in the midst of a civil war. In a decree published by state media, Assad commuted some death sentences to life imprisonment, reduced jail terms for many offenses, and cancelled some others altogether. Opponents say only a fraction of detainees were released in previous amnesties, leaving many thousands of people, including political opponents and activists, as well as ordinary criminals in prison, where they say many are subjected to abuse. Zimbabwe sent a two-man delegation, lawmakers Enoch Porisingazi and Kindness Paradza, to observe the recent elections under the non-aligned movement. We spoke with Kindness Paradza earlier on.
You are aware that Zimbabwe and Syria, there are some of those countries which are under sanctions. So it's natural that we to align ourselves with the Syrian government, and or with the Syrian people, rather, so that we fight the same cause, because it has become a norm for or a practice for America to impose sanctions whenever it disagrees with a sitting administration in that particular country. So we have to stand together with the Syrian people so that we defeat or we give support, solidarity support to the Syrian people on their election day.
The United States and its allies are disputing the election results. In fact, they didn't want the elections to be held now, looking at Syria as a country that is at war. How did you view the election process?
From where we were as observers, the people in Syria were very enthusiastic about the election, and they voted overwhelmingly. And actually, the time for the elections were also extended by about 5 hours, which was an indication that the people of Syria really wanted this election. And for America to tell other countries what to do and what not to do is just not on. Actually, no one now is going to listen to what America says. In other words, the Syrians, they don't care what Americans are thinking or what Barack Obama and his administration are thinking about them, because they've gone for elections, and the elections were done using their own local laws, and President Assad won an election.
Mr. Paradza, how strong is the non-aligned movement at this present time in moment? How important is it? Because I remember when I was a young girl, there was a lot of talk about the non-aligned movement, and it seemed to be a very visible organization. What is the current standing right now of the non-aligned movement?
The non-aligned movement was very strong during the Cold War. And you know, Zimbabwe was the non-aligned movement in 1986. That time, it was very, very strong. Now, because of sanctions, which are being imposed on a number of countries which are non-aligned, which are the NAM group. They are now regrouping, and they are now challenging America and its allies. And this is exactly what Zimbabwe and others are doing. And I cannot tell you that during our tour of Syria, we had the representative from China, MPs from China, MPs from Korea, MPs from Cuba, MPs from Venezuela, Bolivia, Honduras, Mexico, and in Africa with Nigeria, with Ghana, with Mali. So and most of these countries are under sanctions. In South America, Venezuela is under sanctions. And you know, Korea has been under sanctions for over since 1945. So it's now a change. We are now seeing a renewal of this non-aligned movement. America is now facing a challenge.
That was Makonde lawmaker Kindness Paradza speaking with us earlier on from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
European bankers in Zimbabwe to discuss industry and production issues.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say soldiers have exchanged gunfire with troops from neighboring Rwanda. The officials say Congolese forces opened fire early today after the Rwandans crossed the border and abducted a Congolese soldier.
Islamist militants who took over the Iraqi city of Mosul yesterday have reportedly pushed further down south into an area that includes the nation's biggest oil refinery.
And a U.S. House panel is set to get an update on Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency as residents in the northeastern Borno State region grapple with another reported kidnapping by the militant group.
A delegation from the European Investment Bank has arrived in Zimbabwe to engage the country's industry on reviving the struggling manufacturing sector. The move by the EU is seen as a response to the government efforts to re-engage with the international community. However, as Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reports, analysts are asking if this re-engagement will solve Zimbabwe's economic problems.
Zimbabwe's efforts to compete in the global marketplace have been hampered by various obstacles ranging from political discord, its reputation as a high country risk due to its inconsistent political and economic policies, dilapidated infrastructure, energy constraints, and lack of credit, among other factors. There is high expectation, though, that the EU delegation's visit will help kickstart change. The EU ambassador to Harare, Aldo de la Risha, says the meetings between the delegation and the country's private and public sectors are key to strengthening ties.
The essential purpose of the mission is to meet with private bankers and private sector representatives. So they come essentially to identify joint ventures that can be implemented in Zimbabwe. But they will also meet with the governor of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe in order to have his impression on the situation of the country. And there is a meeting with the Minister of Finance.
Reviving Zimbabwe's industries is a key concern for Charles Musipa, president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, or CZI. Musipa says the manufacturing sector, operating at just 30%, down from 39% last year and 45% in 2012, needs at least $7 billion to prevent further collapse of firms that are currently plagued by an unrelenting liquidity crunch and softening consumer demand.
As part of the commitment by the European Investment Bank, they committed to do a follow-up fact-finding and assessment visit to Zimbabwe. They made the commitment to resume lending to the private sector.
Estimates for the industry's revival range between $5 billion to $8 billion U.S. With the exception of some companies that have managed to retool using funds from shareholders or short and medium-term loans from such banks as PTA Bank and Afrex Bank and others through Distressed Industries and Marginalized Areas Fund or DMAF, a vast majority of companies have no access to funding. Former president of the National Chamber of Commerce, Mara Ativagone, says the EU delegation is a welcome development.
These meetings are very important the country, because we are trying to, you know, go there to the international entities like the IMF, the World Bank. So it is very important for us to start meeting with all the those that matter, because we do need assistance so that the country can come out of the doldrums that we are at the moment. As you can see, most of our banks are too undercapitalized, so we need those banks to be pepped up so that you know, if the economy can run again as a vibrant economy.
The visit, however, offers little benefit for the government of Zimbabwe, which is struggling to pay its workers due to the narrowing tax base. The EIB has stated that it will not extend any fresh loans to the cash-strapped government, which is struggling to repay a $300 million loan from the bank. De La Risha says engaging government is not the EIB's current priority.
The European Investment Bank cannot yet lend to the government of Zimbabwe. They cannot have official action with the government because of the arrears that Zimbabwe also. And there is a meeting with the Minister of Finance, which has been foreseen, probably to discuss the issue of the arrears that Zimbabwe owes to the European Investment Bank.
Zimbabwe's inability to pay off its estimated external debt of $6 billion has closed the doors to international finance. Lines of credit for industry, where available, have been available on short-term basis with punitive interest rates. Many attribute Zimbabwe's industry and other sector collapse to the strained relations between Zimbabwe and the West over allegations of human rights and election violations, which the government has refuted and insisted is being punished by the West for embarking on the land reform program. The EU has since eased the sanctions and planned to address the issue in November, as De La Ricia explains.
In July 2012, the European Council has decided to suspend the application of Article 96 of the Cotonou Agreement, which is that article that does not permit to have direct cooperation with the government. Now, thanks to the suspension of that article, we were able to prepare the strategy of cooperation with Zimbabwe for the period 2014-2020.
Analysts say Zimbabwe's effort to re-engage the West is also due to the fact that hopes of financial assistance from China and other allies fell short. Sources say Zimbabwe has no collateral to offer China for loans, and Beijing is insisting on security for its loans. But the silver lining for Zimbabwe is that the EU, the International Monetary Fund, and the African Development Bank have offered to work with Harare to rescue the country from sinking further into recession. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Survivors in the Golden Valley mine accident that killed seven miners on Monday are at odds with management for failing to take them to hospital following the incident. The 11 survivors told the National Mine Workers Union that they were taken to the mine clinic and given painkillers regardless of their injuries and having swallowed contaminated water when a hoist cage transporting them down a shaft broke loose and plunged into a pool of water. The union is now trying to negotiate with mine managers who were in meetings for the greater part of the day to have the survivors sent to hospital for treatment and tests. On the other hand, the Golden Valley Workers Union is being accused by employees of siding with employers and not fully representing the families of the deceased. Meanwhile, one family today collected the body of its late relative for burial tomorrow.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk every day at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listener, topical issues affecting the country. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. The number again, 001-202-465-0318.
And today's discussion is on the irregularities unearthed in the land reform program.
And for all soccer lovers in Zimbabwe, the wait is almost over. We start the sports bulletin with the Brazilian president Dilma Rousseff saying her country is ready to host the World Cup tournament, and she dismisses criticism of the massive cost of staging the event. Angry protests have erupted in recent months across Brazil over the $11 billion that has been spent to build stadium and transportation projects in the 12 worst cities. Demonstrators say the projects have siphoned money away from other services such as health and education, and have blamed the huge cost overruns on official corruption. Health and education by more than 200% since 2000. It has gone down by 200% since 2010. The president said despite the problems associated with hosting the World Cup, Brazil was ready and eager to welcome the world.
In a nationally televised address yesterday, Ms. Rousseff said Brazil has increased spending on health and education by more than 200%. Ms. Rousseff said Brazil would continue to reap the benefits of the infrastructure projects long after the World Cup ended. She also vowed to seek punishment against anyone found to have engaged in corruption. The World Cup begins tomorrow when the host country takes to the pitch against Croatia. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya, who has spoke with the VOA's Nico Pinot, who is in Sao Paulo for the opening match.
Hello, it's Nico Pinot in Sao Paulo, Brazil, for the opening game of the World Cup, Brazil versus Croatia.
Tell us, what is the mood like?
So right now, you know, compared 24 hours before this huge game in Brazil, that people are getting more and more excited. You see, you know, the shops, you're seeing Brazilian flags, scarf and everything. You can tell that the game is pretty close. And the most exciting thing is that the Brazilian team arrived last night pretty late in Sao Paulo, you know, to be there for the game. They're going to have a training session today at the stadium and a press conference with Neymar and Felipe Scolari, coach of the Brazilian team. So right now, the national team is in town and everybody is really crazy about this World Cup.
Nicola, we look at the Brazilian team. This is a young team. What do you think the mood is like in the camp? Is the home crowd not putting too much pressure on the team?
Yes, so obviously everybody is waiting, is expecting a huge performance from the Brazilian team. Obviously there is a huge pressure. This is the first time since 1950 that Brazil is organizing a World Cup. So you have huge expectations from the population. And obviously, you know, Brazilian team in the history, this is the best team of the world. I mean, they won 5 World Cup, and everybody here is expecting that Brazilian team is going to win the 6th trophy here. And obviously, there's a huge expectation around one player. His name is Neymar, the star from FC Barcelona. You can tell the kids, women, even old men, everybody, they have his name when they say who's going to win, who's going to be the best player. So obviously, you got huge expectation, and that's why Croatian team, they're not in town. They're far away. They're in Salvador de Bahia, pretty close the beach, and they wanted to stay far, far away from all the expectation around the Brazilian team. They're going to arrive today. They're going to also have their training session at the Corinthians Arena, but we could expect a really tough game because Croatian team is very technical. They have great players playing for the best team in Europe. So it's not going to be that easy for the Brazilian team. But let's say because they're being home, they're going to have a huge advantage.
When you look at the Croatian team itself, which players can Brazil look out for? I know Brazil obviously has more support, but have you seen any Croatian fans there in Sao Paulo?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, in my hotel right now, last night, a bunch of Croatian fans, they just arrived, and you can tell that they're pretty excited, obviously, regarding this opening game. They know they're going to have a tough opposition with Brazil, but hey, they keep saying that Ivan Rakitic, the best player, will obviously be the man to look for that. And obviously, Luka Modric and Rakitic, who's from the team Sevilla in Spain, obviously, they're going to look after these two players to be able to at least score once. And hey, right now, they are really hopeful that they might win the opening game. But you have two players that you have to really look after during the games, Ivan Rakitic and Luka Modric.
Thank you, Nico Pino, for giving us an insight into the World Cup 2014.
Thank you, and see you tomorrow.
Talk to you again tomorrow when the 2014 World Cup kicks off.
Thanks, Marvelous. That was VOA's Nico Pino in Sao Paulo, Brazil, for the World Cup 2014.
Meanwhile, Zifa is represented at the World Cup by its president, Cuthbert Dube, his deputy, Omega Sbanda, and PSL boss, Jonathan Mashingaidze. The three today attended a FIFA meeting and will tomorrow also attend the opening match in Sao Paulo.
And that brings us to the end of the show. But before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.
Harare residents are concerned by the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority's decision to increase load shedding as the country struggles to revive industrial and agricultural production.
A delegation from the European Investment Bank is in Zimbabwe to engage the country's industry on reviving the struggling manufacturing sector as the EU responds to government's efforts to re-engage with the international community.
And as we have just heard from our colleague in Sao Paulo, Nico Pino, the Brazilian president says they are ready to host the World Cup tournament.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Join us at 7 every evening for news in 3 languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us